This is Dr. Charles Parker, and you're listening to Core Brain Journal. It's the place where I connect both fresh discoveries and interesting different perspectives from advanced mind science with the realities of real people and everyday life down on Main Street.
Well, welcome aboard, folks. Here we are, Dr. Charles Parker, one more time at Core Brain Journal, and we have an exceedingly interesting individual. She is a world traveler. She has had a transformational experience out of country that we're going to get into that actually prompted her to write a groundbreaking book called The Impact of the Human Stress Response. What's really neat is she is going to talk about cellular stress, stress on a cellular level. She can really help us understand the biology of stress. So welcome aboard, Mary. We look forward to talking to you.
Wow, it's great to be here. Thank you for the warm welcome, Charles.
So Mary is a stress expert, a scientist, and an author. She was born in the U.S. where she earned a PhD in human stress research from the University of North Texas. Is that in Austin?
No. That's actually in Denton.
Oh, in Denton. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
And she earned a PhD in human stress there in 2014. She then emigrated to Ecuador, a tiny country in South America, and there, living in a new and very different society, her eyes were opened to the unsustainable social, economic, and political costs that preventable stress causes in our modern world. Dr. Wingo's aim is to clearly explain to the public the biologic mechanisms behind the stress response, as well as, get this, its staggering costs to our society. She presents effective science-based stress management solutions, right in our theme here at Core Brain, that any person in the community can employ. So, as I said, the book is The Impact of the Human Stress Response, and that's going to be available in the show notes. So, Mary, please go a little bit into who you are as a person, where you are now, before we dig into the deep stuff.
Well, Charles, I mean, there's really not much to me. I'm an immigrant. I came here in 2014. I actually graduated in 2000 with my PhD. And you know, basically about, I don't know, I've actually been out of science and academia for 10 years. I decided to become, you know, an entrepreneur. And one reason I decided to go that route was I saw, you know, based from my own background, the unsustainable nature of our culture. And I was just too sensitive. There are other people that can, you know, tough it out, of course, pay the price later. But I knew that there was not going to be much of a future in the U.S. And I wanted to prepare to leave the country somehow, some way. Took me 10 years to prepare everything, to sort of change my career, to make everything to where a move would be easily possible. Mm-hmm. And I did it. And what happened was, so I had the intent for, oh gosh, many years. And I had a friend down here had retired, and I'm like, I'm going to come visit you for a month. And so I came down here and I explored the entire city. This is Cuenca, Ecuador, and I explored
this city. Ecuador now. I was wondering where down here was. You are there. I'm telling you.
Oh, yeah. I live here. Yeah. I live here. And yes, it's, you know, it's basically, you know, many parts of Ecuador is just like, you know, cities in Peru. I'm sorry, cities in Europe. You know, the infrastructure is, you know, totally modern and probably more cutting edge than, you know, many of that in the U.S. and Europe. So, yeah, it's a great place. It's a fantastic place. And it was probably the best decision I made, because what I saw down here, again, with my background through the eyes of a scientist, just blew my mind. And it basically wrapped up, I was able sort of to wrap up the loose ends of my ideas before putting them in the book.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So, and then you've been down there this whole time. You're an expat. You just didn't come back.
Oh no, absolutely not.
Mm-hmm. She says that with some finality, folks. Well, tell us a little bit about your background and what prompted you to leave. What was going on? I mean, you had a transformational experience there. Leaving would have been part of it.
Well, you know, I saw in our culture where, I don't know, when you are going to funerals every month or two and you see your own family shrinking, you see other people's families shrinking, and you're not seeing much of a birth rate, you know, you're not seeing very many people get married, form families, and you're seeing what the government is desperately trying to do to keep, you know, a declining situation afloat. And I just didn't see a lot of future. I just didn't see where there's going to be any future. I saw, you know, where it would just, if one chose to stay in the U.S., the overwhelming odds would be a very stressful, unstable life. I mean, for the average person.
Well, then how did all that take you into the biology of stress? I mean, you were a biologist and a stress expert before you went there.
Oh yeah. I mean, as a physiologist, and I've been into this for like, since I was a young undergraduate. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is just because I remember just being a young person and you know, looking at, you know, physiology and then psychophysiology, psychobiology, and how the stress response, or really it's the human adaptation response, adaptive response, works. And it wasn't well understood. I mean, you had all these correlations. You had population studies of animals and humans and, you know, of correlations like, okay, when this hormone goes up, well, these other metabolic factors go down. And just the thinkers in this field were just piling on data, you know, just more and more and more. And it's just fascinating, but yet there was no one cohesive theory behind this. Mm-hmm. It was very, very fractured. So in that, okay, say if you were talking to a molecular biologist, you know, looks at the protein and DNA level, the molecules of a cell. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we can look at stress on that level, or we can look at stress on a more macro physiological level, you know, feedback loops of hormones, of the immune system, many parts of the immune system, of the nervous system, the autonomic nervous system, the central nervous system. Well, which part do you want to look at? You want to look at the cognitive effects of stress or the emotional effects of stress? And then while we're at it, do you want to look at those effects on a person's community, on their family, on politics? I mean, yeah. But look at what's going on today. You know, we're not at the heels of a revolution because everyone is just fine and dandy. They're under immense stress. Stress is what drives revolutions. And so I'm just looking at like every hierarchy, you look at this and it's like, oh my God, this is absolutely huge. And now that we're in, you know, very unstable times, people are more vulnerable to stress than they ever were. And all I'm just trying to do is give a vocabulary so that practitioners and just regular folks can have something, some sort of standard, gold standard to go by, so they can assess risk in their life.
Subject. I mean, when
you, oh my God, yeah.
I mean,
oh yeah.
The umbrella just went global on that one.
Absolutely. That's why it took so long.
And so then, when you say took so long for you to actually conceptualize what you were going to say in your book.
Yeah. Because again, it's not just, you know, what I want people to understand is where you're looking at these hierarchies of study, it's an entire lifetime's worth of understanding just within those hierarchies. I mean, you know, just the regular, again, looking at the cellular part of stress. Okay, so we're going to focus on that. That's an entire set of lingo and concepts that are alien to, like, say, someone who's a systems physiologist. I mean, so we've got two biologists maybe even two human biologists. But the vocabulary doesn't even overlap, so they don't even understand each other. So basically, the field just sort of got stuck at piles and piles of papers, probably over 100,000 papers.
Gee, that's interesting. I didn't.
And no cohesive theory. Nothing cohesive.
I would have thought that they would have been integrated in some way. For you to just say that just now, because you would think that a physiologist was on top of the cellular physiology as well.
No, of course not. No. Basically, you have these, sort of machines within individual fields of science, and they just, usually speaking, like molecular biologists will speak to other molecular biologists. So, okay, they can understand each other. But, you know, when you're looking at, how does that lead to collapse in working memory in your frontal lobe? Oh, well, no idea. You know, that's a physiology. That's neuroscience right there. And you know, you're having to go up several, hierarchies just to get to that point. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's probably more complex than quantum mechanics. Mm-hmm. And to really understood it, it took me, I wouldn't say I'm exactly an expert, but took some level of expertise at every single hierarchy. So not only did I need to understand the science behind all this, I needed to understand the psychology, the sociology, the political science and economics of this too. And that's, yeah. And then finally, we're seeing some patterns here.
So you have that in one book.
Oh, and it's a little book too. It's not a big, fat, sprawling book. It's a little book.
It sounds like the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, it's very interesting. I do look forward to reading it. It's very, and you know, folks, what's happened is Mary has given us a download, which will be available at corebrainjournal.com/051download. She's going to have we're going to load a training video that's going to be available for you upon your inquiry into the download. So, I mean, she's got it you've got it on video a little bit, I imagine. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I've got lots of training videos, lots of articles, a lot of teaching material. And, stuff just gets added all the time.
Well, Mary, let's try to, obviously, this is a very large subject. We only have a half an hour. I mean, it's regrettable because we could probably talk the entire afternoon here, but for right now, let's try to distill it even more a little bit for our audience in terms of what, on a personal level, drove you. What was it that was transformational for you as a person to say, hey, you know, I've hit this place that I've just got to do something about this now. I've only got one life. I'm here in this reality. I've got to do something with it.
Well, basically, Charles, the book had been kind of sticking in my craw for literally all these years. I mean, it was like, God, nobody else is coming out with this. And man, this is important. I mean, this is bankrupting families. You know, families are losing their primary breadwinner. It's causing disability. I mean, why are we so sick? And you know, it stuck in my craw for many years, but honestly, I'd been out of science. I'd been like a small business person for actually, about 10 years. And I really, I didn't really like the scientific and academic field. I really didn't like it. I thought it was extremely, in my opinion, corrupt and Machiavellian. And again, I'm just too sensitive of a person to deal with that type of environment. I'm like, screw it. I'm not gonna, I'm just gonna, do my thing. And I came across, for some unrelated reasons, the jungle medicine that everyone talks about.
It's all over down there, isn't it?
Well, I wouldn't say it's all over, but it's common.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, it's totally legal.
Yeah.
It's part of it's considered a medicine down here. is in the Amazon. Amazon's just right over the hill. I live in the Andes, and you just kind of, if you want to go over the hill, and there's the Amazon. And needless to say, I mean, I, you know, this was from, you know, separate issues I had. You know, everybody's got their issues. But basically, after that, these words started spontaneously just flowing out. And I couldn't believe it, because I hadn't written anything, any technical writing in 10 years, you know, nothing like that. I mean, you know, it's all been, you know, business and, you know, but it, like anything scientific, formatting, you know, all that. I hadn't done it in 10 years. Hmm. And it just literally started like falling out of my head. It was almost like, it was like a different entity. I mean, I would, you know, as far out as that seems, that's what the sensation of it was, that, you know, I was just basically a vassal, you know, and it, who knows what the reality of the situation is, but it came from that.
So it distilled from that experience with jungle medicine.
Yes.
And all of a sudden you had an intellectual, as well as sounds like an emotional, transformational experience.
Let me tell you the interesting thing about ayahuasca, which makes it very useful for many people, especially those with PTSD, is something that seems to be very common, you know, with you know, folks who take it, is that you can resolve a lot of trauma, and that you have the flashback. Okay, so you revisit, and you may not even remember it. This may have been stuff that, like, before you could like really speak well, but you know it happened. I mean, you remember it and you just forgot about it. But it's whenever the trauma happened, and you go back, and rather than get the autonomic nervous activity, or I'm sorry, the fight or flight nervous activity, the pounding heart, you know, the really miserable symptoms that come from remembering something that you don't really want to remember, mm-hmm. like a flashback. But, and what it does is, and this is what I think it does. I think it through the paraventricular nucleus of your hypothalamus, I believe that it cuts the connection between the classically conditioned connection between the thought and the autonomic, or I should say the fight or flight, pounding heart experience. And it uses oxytocin, I believe, in order to do that. Okay, because oxytocin, very, very old hormone, I mean, one of the basics, and it just gets in there and it dampens sympathetic nervous activity. It dampens that is one of the few hormones that actually dampens the sympathetic nervous response. So I believe, you know, and it works probably through like other psychedelics, through the serotonergic system. But I believe that it's the mechanisms for action. And I believe the mechanisms for overcoming trauma, if you want to get into disorders of extreme stress, come from the mechanisms of oxytocin, ultimately.
That's interesting.
I believe so. Because ultimately, what it comes down to, if you're going to resolve traumas or, you know, disorders of extreme stress, which is absolutely endemic. Oh, my God. Charles, look at the expats down here.
Oh, yeah.
And seriously, like compared to the Ecuadorians, there's very, very traumatized people. I mean, even people that maybe aren't outwardly traumatized, you know, they didn't really, you know, have particularly a bad experience in the U.S. or stressful. Just the rat race, the typical, yeah, of just doing it. And here you are 75 years old and you've done this for like, you know, 50 something, 60 something years. And you're kind of warped. And you don't notice it when you're like in the U.S., but when you're down here, you're like, oh my gosh. And I think what, you know, resolving deep stress or deep trauma, which comes for 5 major reasons from living in a, that we'll discuss later, in a society such as ours and in Europe and Japan, it is it's the fact that you have to feel safe. And people, I don't believe, are feeling very safe in our society. I think when you're constantly worried about, you know, are you going to be able to feed your kids? Are you going to lose your job? Are you going to become homeless? I think, and then you come to a place like Ecuador where there's like hardly any homelessness, and you're thinking, this is a country that in theory on paper is much, much poorer, but you don't have problems with hunger or homelessness. And you don't have really a big problem. I mean, I've always felt safe while hitchhiking down here. I could never have said that in the U.S. And, you know, it's stuff like that. Like, oh, my God, these are some traumatized people. And they come down here and they just die. Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, they're usually retirees. But, you know, they just come down here and
they wind down.
Yeah, they a lot of times just drink themselves to death. Yeah. And it comes from feeling safe. And when we don't feel safe, and that feeling of safety, guess where that comes from? That comes from the oxytocin.
Interesting point.
Yep.
So down for our, this is a, what you're telling us is a very interesting evolution of how you as a person got down to the bones of your mission and your message, as well as your life and living your life.
Yeah.
Not only your message, but who you are as a person.
Oh, yeah. I'm very, very sensitive to stress. I mean, I'm very, and, you know, that's what made me very interested in it. And I realized I walk the walk, I talk the talk, because it's what worked for me. And, you know, it's what appears, through the meta-analysis of many, many, many studies, what appears to work in general for others.
And crystallized out in some serious thoughts. Now, let me ask you this, because I'm looking at the clock here, and I know...
Hey, we could go all that. We haven't even got to a cellular part.
You know, that's what's going on. This is the U.S. mind talking to the transformed person out there in the Amazon. But the issue then becomes one in terms of our listeners who tend to be predominantly U.S., Australia, New Zealand, U.K. What can we do with this? And this is a terrible thing to say to a deep person like you, but you mentioned those five kind of axiomatic points, and I'm sure you elaborate on these in the book, but if you could give us a little bit of where to go, your formulation of some things we could do as individuals to reconsider our lives and the lives of those we love, and in fact our whole society, are there some things in those five points that we could take home?
Absolutely. Absolutely, Charles. What it comes down to, okay, ultimately, it's really, really simple, is like you would have a food diary or like, say, a money diary for, you know, when you're trying to establish a budget and get a hold of your spending. I provide a framework in my book of going through and setting forth a framework for people, now that they have the vocabulary from these five points I'll talk about in a second, listing every single stressor that they have under the umbrella of the five-point category that we have. And when you do that, you can very quickly see what are stressors that you need to remove from your life. Now, and these are people... This only, of course, works people who are like near rock bottom, you know, that, when you're losing breadwinners, when you're losing, you know, family structures are falling apart, you don't need the extra expense of preventable stress exposure. So, you know, this is kind of like, you know, sort of like when you're hitting rock bottom and you need to make an inventory. So basically, it's real simple. That's all it basically is. And then you can do the same for stress in your community as well. You can take that and repeat that process, like say within political, social, religious groups, for instance, to solve more on a greater level. Now, this is very quickly, because this could take an hour just barely touching on what these 5 points are, but here they are. Number one, okay, is loss of working memory, or we can also call it complexity. Okay, so working memory is what we get from a properly functioning frontal lobe system.
Yeah.
Which helps us plan for the future. It helps us. It's our major stress hormone. It's our most important stress organ, the frontal lobes.
It's the place where we adjust to change.
Well, it's the place. Well, actually, hold on. Where we adjust to change is on the more hormonal and immune level.
Oh, interesting.
Where we change the environment to suit us, that's the frontal lobe.
I got it.
That where we manipulate the environment versus manipulate our morphology, ourselves. You see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do. Absolutely.
So we're cold, right? We get cold. And okay, so we can put more pressure on our thyroid, you know, to try to generate more heat, sit there shivering. Or, you know, we can, like, use our brains and, like, some way make a coat and build a house. You see what I'm saying? These are artificial constructs that lessen the stress response and allowed for us to, if you want to call it prosper, or I should say take over the, you know, world as humans.
Or survive, however you want to look at it.
But. Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, not only survive, but just basically take over as the top predators.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. I'm
totally with you on that. So, planning it. Okay. So when we stress that, we're in big trouble. Number two is social inequality. Okay. And we all know about this, right?
Oh, yeah.
So whenever you have a system that is unequal, there's especially on the guys on the very, very bottom are having problems getting access to basic resources. You're like clockwork. I mean, this isn't, you know, rocket science. You're going to have a mass stress response in a herd, you know, in groups of people. And this never, as we see what's going on right now in Europe and well, all over the world, actually, you know, it's not in a leader's, in the head honcho's best interest to have a stressed out populace. It's there's a point in time when you need to concede some of your booty a little bit in order to keep people from you know, just basically saying off with your head, you know.
Killing each other. Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what's going on, no question about it.
Yeah, yeah. And then number three is a segue from number two, is loss of social capital or social connections, which, as I'm sure you know and maybe have talked about before, because we are so precocious when we are born. We're basically like human larvae. We're worse than the kittens with their eyes closed. I mean, you know, we take a very long time to mature. And because of that, we are hardwired for social connection. And again, this was another thing I saw here in Ecuador, social capital. A well-formed social capital system replaces political and financial capital. So it becomes a lot less complex and a lot less expensive to live in a society with well-functioning support networks, whether they're religious, social, political, you know, whatever. Okay, so we have that. And then kind of a little bit of a turn, which would surprise a lot of people, is the derangement or depletion of the human biome, which this includes the critters that live in our guts and in our skin and in our orifices that basically function as extension of our organ systems, like extension of our digestive systems, the extension of endocrine systems. It's immune signaling, growth, cellular growth signal. There's a bunch of stuff that the organisms that coexist with us do for us. Okay, and we've totally screwed that up in modernized society.
Broken that communication system down.
Well, yeah, and it's mainly what we put on our mouths. I mean, it's mainly diet, the drugs we take. It's mainly due to that, plus the chemicals, household chemicals we use. Just the stuff that we use that we didn't have access to, like say 75 years ago. We just don't have. We haven't evolved the systems, Charles, to metabolize these.
Okay? So now you're taking it from, it's a big leap, and it's an important leap, from the social capital connections down to
chemical
microbiota. You're right.
Yeah, chemical. Yeah, these are chemical stressors. Mm-hmm. And then the fifth is actually a chemical stress, but it's more broad. It includes, derangement of our biome, but it also includes, again, the exposure, glyphosate, for instance, exposure, to antibiotics, to various processed food we eat, okay? And then we have the exposure to stuff that we didn't ask for, and this is where community action comes in, like pollution, okay? The other types is pollution of the earth, the water, and the soil, which is thought to cause 40% of all deaths, believe it or not. So we're talking immense chemical stressors, and it all ends up the same way. You get stress-related illness, explosion of stress-related illness, and premature death and disability.
I don't know if you know Dr. I'm hesitating right now, but I think it's Bart Billings with the whole thing of metadarwinism.
I am not familiar.
Genomic. He's right down the path of what you're talking about on number four, and we've interviewed him. And I'm hesitating with his name. I'm just not good at names. I'm into the concept. And what I'm going to do while you tell us a little more about that exposure of the environment, I'm going to come. I'm just going to leave you for a second and go over and get the reference. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So basically, we have these five major causes of stress in modernized society, westernized society, and I explain these in great detail in my book, and of course also in various videos on my website. But what people can do is, now that they understand and they know what stress actually is, and they can sit down and they can make an inventory, okay? And they have the vocabulary, and they know that if they can eliminate these stresses, that the quality of their life will improve dramatically and rapidly.
See, that's great. What you say is, if you just practice some of this and pay attention to it, then you can actually address it. If you don't, you're just living in it, and it's going to take you down.
Oh, yeah. And it's, this out of control way, that we glamorize the stressful lifestyle. We consider it like the Protestant work ethic. We consider it, we're macho, we're tough Americans, man. We can put in the 60-hour work week, we can multitask, we can deal with 5 million things on our plate. We're super moms. Well, see, that type of stuff is a load of crap, and it just doesn't jive with how we're made, and it does nothing. It just does nothing but make you old. It does nothing. I mean, you may get, a temporary boost at this point of stage in history, from being a workaholic, but in the long term, especially in the U.S., where medical costs are just out of control, your stressful habits could very easily bankrupt you, and you can lose everything that you worked your entire life for.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you, I went and found the name, and I misremembered it, because we had two recent guys. Dr. Bart Billings is somewhat different, but on the same track, and that is combat trauma. He's like one of the world preeminent authorities on what happens with vets coming back and dealing with reality and getting stuck with that. That's episode 031. The one that I wanted to make sure you listen to is Core Brain Journal 033, Dr. Bill Miller on the genomic evolution, and how he hooks together the fact that the microbiota, that's the meta-Darwinism, is the idea that we used to think that we evolved through survival of the fittest, killing and management and so on and so forth. And his point is that on a cellular level, the way we have evolved as human beings and as the whole planet is by these microbiota talking to each other effectively and communicating effectively.
Yes. Yes, actually. I mean, you know, I go over in my book, what are we? I mean, are we just ourselves? I mean, like our eukaryotic cells? Or are we us plus our little critters?
Yeah.
We're actually, I mean, so I get into this existential crisis of, whoa, who am I? You know, well, you're not just, you know, your epithelium, you know, covered system. You have got many, many times the number of microorganisms, cohabitating with you than you do of your own native cells.
Yeah, you're carrying a colony.
I think it's like somewhere around, like half a gallon. If you were to just put everything that you have, living on and within you into a jar, it's something like, around half a gallon, maybe a little bit more.
Yeah. Well, these guys are communicating effectively and keeping you alive and warding off the various, organisms that seek to take us down.
Well, it's not just that, but they also program your immune system. I mean, you notice we've had an explosion of autoimmune related diseases that maybe when you were a boy were just like hardly anybody had. I mean, we're relatively well. This is thought to be a direct result because of that. I mean, just for instance.
Yeah, that's one of our favorite topics, and there's another person we've interviewed here who goes into very complex immunity issues. Very, very interesting, because all these are really, I mean, to coin a phrase, core brain issues.
Yeah.
Because if we look at communicating effectively and take the larger picture into question and really think about the complexity, we're gonna get away from labels and oversimplification of what we're dealing with and putting people into boxes that are really, in the end, counterproductive.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I just, things were really getting so bad. I mean, you know, from what, especially my vantage point down here in Ecuador, and nobody else was writing this, but nobody else was putting it together. And I'm thinking, my gosh, I mean, we're staring straight into like the face of humanitarian crisis, and people aren't even really putting this together. Why? I mean, you know, why? And I knew that writing this book was going to like take a big chunk of flesh out. And boy, I tell you what, there were days, man, I felt loopy. I mean, it was, you're talking stuff so complicated, you're just sort of kind of almost losing touch, you know, with reality a little bit, you know, and you have to like kind of walk and, you know, go on a walk outside to try to, you know, get some air. But yeah, I really wanted people, average folks, general folks, non-scientists, to be able to get a good grasp on this and be able to be proactive in their own lives and in their communities.
Well, that's one of the things we really do appreciate about you, Mary, is the fact that you're translating. I mean, a lot of these words, eukaryotic and all that sort of thing, a lot of our listeners will not get that, to tell you the truth. But the issue, that isn't the point. I love the fact that you are willing to take it to that deeper level, what the connections actually are, and translate it into everyday life, because that's really our mission here. I mean, we're going to make an impact. It's not going to be scientists talking to scientists. It's going to be communicating with everybody at every level effectively.
Yeah, we scientists, well, actually academics in general, are very arrogant, narcissistic bunch. And it's like, and I remember thinking this when I was a graduate student, like, why do we have all this lingo? Why, you know, it's like, I'm not understanding a word that this guy is saying. And it's not that it's because he's just, it's just pure lingoese. It was like a foreign language. And I'm like, the process isn't all that hard. I mean, you could like watch a cartoon and, you know, 30-second cartoon and get the process of, you know, like say the basics of molecular biology. I mean, you know, anybody could.
Well, the further you go into concepts, the further you get away from reality.
And well, yeah. And I just, I remember being, I don't know, offended myself. And, you know, I thought that this was kind of an offensive. And from then on, whatever I could do is very difficult. But whatever I could do to make myself more clear has been just basically one of my major goals in life in general.
Well, we're brother and sister on that, Mary. I'll tell you, my transformational experience came at the Waldorf Astoria in New York City at the American Psychoanalytic Association in probably, it was 1973 or 74. And we were on one of the upper floors at the psychoanalytic meeting, and individuals were smoking cigars and talking with each other about the sub-functions of the superego and how they actually communicated with
them. Oh yeah, yeah, that's deep stuff. Yeah.
Well, it was so deep, it was not real. I mean, it's layers and layers of abstraction that really didn't have a way to actually get down to the street level to actually do something for a person. But and that was transformational for me, because I said, you know, where am I going in my lifetime with this? It's interesting. I'll tell you one thing that's attractive about psychoanalysis. I'm sure you found this with your stress and your academic career. People are very interesting. The concepts are interesting. The issue is, how do you translate it? What do you do with it? How does it become meaningful to the people whose lives you touch?
Well, I know for me, like, I thought that I wrote a fairly clear book. I mean, yeah, it needed a ton of editing. I'm no editor. But three editors later, and all of them had emotional conniptions with the, I mean, seriously, like, boy, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cause all this emotional strife in your life because of my, you know, editing my book.
Now, when you say emotional, do you mean kind of philosophic differences with you, or what do you say? What do you mean?
It was awful. One of them was an Oxford lawyer. A lawyer from Oxford, England, and went to Oxford University, and he couldn't understand what I was talking about. And I'm like, this is like plain English. I don't understand. I don't understand a damn word you're saying. Right. And so he rewrote, not knowing what I was talking about. Then I had a second editor from Texas helped me, and I'm thinking, okay, well, I've got most of this edited, this is great. And I said, so it's already been through a huge, like, major transform. And she, you know, emails me a few days later, so she's like, I'm gonna need some more money for this, Mary, this is way bigger than what you led me to believe. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. And then finally there was a third one here, just a real smart guy who went through it. And after the other two. And he's like, you know, I felt like you were talking down to me. But I'm like, but this isn't even hardly my words anymore. This is like, you know, a combination of two other editors. He said, I don't care. You know, you're going to have to dumb it down more. And I'm like, well, not dumb it down. But so, yeah, it was a very... Yeah, I needed three, and it finally, I think after like three major, I mean, when we're talking like 18 revisions, I think it's somewhat readable. I think a few people, at least one or two people, can read it.
Sounds so doggone interesting. Listen, I'm looking again at the time. Pardon me for for being in this other world, but what I'd like to do is, you know, there's more to talk about here, and I would like to have you back one time. I think we should really have a moment where we read this and have a planning session on what are we going to do with it. You know?
Oh, yeah, I would love that. I would love it. Anything that helps your listeners, you know, let's do it.
Well, let's take this down to where you are. Where would you like people to go to connect with you? I'm going to have a lot of this in the show notes, but let's get you to tell them where they could productively move forward.
Well, they can go to my website, Mary maryingo.com, maryingo.com. And you can buy my book. It's like only $2.99 there, and I priced it to where just about everybody in the world, I know Ecuadorians could afford it, and I know people in Pakistan can afford it. So you can get it off my site for $2.99. You can get it off of Amazon for $3.99. You can also get a paperback. And you can also, if with time permitting, I don't always have very much time, but if someone wants to have a coach to go through these five steps, if I've got time, I'll be happy to help. If there's a business that wants to have some really deep consulting, because stress is bankrupting many businesses right now, and have some consulting to try to rein in some more efficiency on the human resource level, then I'm open for that as well. Again, these are time permitting. When I have time, my schedule does fill up quickly.
Sounds great, Mary. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mary Wingo.
My pleasure.
Mary Wingo, it's been great talking to you. It has been a little transformational in compared to what transformation you had experienced, but we do appreciate it. And thank you so much for taking the time.
Oh, my pleasure. I look forward to coming back, Charles.
Have a good one, Mary.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now.
Thanks for listening to CoreBrain Journal. We're working every day behind the scenes to bring you reports that connect research benches with those street trenches. Here we share the complexity of mind science because, as you know, details really do matter. One of the most pervasive, misunderstood challenges is how commonplace medications, like those written for ADHD, are used so regularly without clear guidelines. If you think you'd like more specifics, take a minute to download my 2-page PDF packed with video links and references on the absolute essentials of how to start ADHD medications. They're easily available at corebrainjournal.com/start. Thanks for listening. Do connect and stay tuned. Together we can make a difference.